Today we are going to continue our discussion about the history of machlokas. Last time we talked about a number of theories as to what caused the proliferation of debate. We noted that the Rambam and the Gemara both sort of identify two factors. Number one is that there were Talmidei Shammai v'Hillel Shloshim who call it Tzorach, and that's why there are so many machlokes in between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Number two is that with Bittul Sanhedrin, so the ability to resolve the debates also became diminished because until that point, so whenever there was a machlokes, you could just go to the Sanhedrin HaGadol and resolve the debate. We noted how conceivably these two factors more or less took place at the same time, as implied by the Rambam. If you assume that Bittul Sanhedrin refers to the Sanhedrin leaving the Lishkas HaGazis, so that was 40 years prior to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and Shammai himself died in around the year 30. We talked about how, I don't remember exactly how far we got, but we considered other reasons for the lack of resolution. So we talked about that one thing, actually, I think we didn't get to this. One interesting thing is that though there was a proliferation of debate at that point, this wasn't the only debate. During the lifetime of Shammai and during the period of the Zugos, so there was a unresolved debate about Smicha and Yantif, and then during Shammai and Hillel's Tkufa, there was another three unresolved debates. So maybe we'll start with that, which is why was there this unresolved debate during the period of the Zugos? Now, what machlokas are we referring to? So if you look at the Mishnah and Chagiga, Perek Beis, Mishnah Beis, it says that during the period of the Zugos, there was a machlokas about Smicha and Yantif. So the Mishnah says, and it should be in your Makoros, Yosi ben Yoezer Omer Shalol Lismoch. Yosi ben Yochanan Omer Lismoch. Yoshua ben Prachi Omer Shalol Lismoch. Nitayar ba Eli Omer Lismoch. Yudah ben Tabai Omer Shalol Lismoch. Shimon ben Shetach Omer Lismoch. Shmaya Omer Lismoch. Avtalion Omer Shalol Lismoch. Hillel Menachem Nechlaku. Yaz Menachem Nechna Shammai. Shammai Omer Shalol Lismoch. Hillel Omer Lismoch. Harishonim hayu nasiim. So the first of these pairs were the Nasi. Vishniyam lahem av beis din. And the second were av beis din. So this is known as the period of Zugos. This was approximately from the year 170 BCE to the year 30 of the Common Era. So we're talking about a period of about 200 years. And they had this machlokas about smicha. And the last pair of the Zugos, as we see, is Shammai and Hillel. So, and during their tkufa, there were three additional machlokas. And so the question is, why didn't they resolve this debate? In other words, there was a Sanhedrin during this period of time. The Sanhedrin was in the Beis HaMikdash. So why didn't they just get together and say, okay, let's settle it once and for all. Let's take a vote and decide, should we do smicha or should we not do smicha? Why did this machlokas persist for five generations? So I think, first of all, we have to consider the historical context here. It would seem that the level of Torah scholarship during at least part of the period of the Zugos was quite poor. And there was a number of reasons for this. First and foremost, the persecution of Talmidei Chachamim, which happened on several occasions. The Gemara tells us about Yanai or Alexander Yanai. He lived from 127 BCE to 76 BCE, and he tried to destroy all the Talmidei Chachamim. I'm sure many of you remember last year from the Gemara that it's quite a tragic story. Alexander Yanai, he was the son of Yochanan Hyrcanus, who was the son of Shimon, who was the son of Mattathiah, who was the son of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, right? So he was the great-grandson, I guess, of the first of the Chashmonaim. So he had pretty good yichus. And he became the king at the age of 23 when his older brother, Yehuda Aristobulus, died. And Yehuda Aristobulus, his brother, was the first, actually, of the Hashmonaim to call himself the king. I think previously they were called the Nasi. And that was already a bad thing. He had questionable yichus. The Gemara in Brachos, Chaf Tasamad Aleph, actually tries to figure out who exactly he was. And when he realized, this is a Gemara in Kiddushin, on Daf Samach Vav Mad Aleph, when he realized that the Chachamim were not totally in approval of his rulership, so basically he killed the Chachamim. Another event that caused this animosity took place during Sukkot, because he refused to do Nisuch Hamayim, and that, you know, when he poured the water instead of pouring it on the Mizbeach, like he should have, he didn't do that. And he poured it on the ground, and they stoned him with esrogim. And then Yanai turned to the soldiers and told them to attack the people. Anyway, the Gemara, we'll see it next year in Brachos, on Daf Mem Chesem at Aleph in Brachos, says that after he killed all the Chachamim, he couldn't even find anyone to lead Birkas HaMazon for him. So his wife told him that if she promised not to hurt them, she'd find someone to help him, to lead the Zimun. So he said, all right, I won't. And she produces Shimon ben Shetach, who was her brother, right? So this was the king's brother-in-law. And so then, you know, Herod, then eventually he did it. He told him, so lead the benching. And he said, well, give me something to eat. You know, what am I supposed to do, bench without eating? Anyway, that's the whole story over there in Brachos. But so you see that there were no Chachamim. And so either he killed them all, or perhaps those who hadn't been killed were in hiding. So this was certainly not a scenario where, you know, the Chachamim could get together and start voting and resolving halacha questions. If you want to see sort of what, you know, the degree to which he was despised, and also Herod, which we'll see a little later, who was another king who killed the Chachamim. So if you look at Megillas Tainis, it says that on the day of their deaths, there was like a yuntif, basically, a mini yuntif. So that was one of the people who, during this tkufa, tried to kill out the Chachamim. Another person was, like we said, was Herod. The Gemara Bava Basra we saw last year said that Herod spared Bava ben Buta because he valued his advice, but he blinded him. And then later on, it would seem that he did come to appreciate the Chachamim a little more, like the Gemara in Bava Basra. He came to see that the Chachamim didn't hate him as much as he thought, and he decided to try to atone by refurbishing the Beis Hamikdash. He built this beautiful, incredible structure. But again, that too, so was a persecution. So this was not a time and place where they could simply get together and resolve shilas, even if the Beis Hamikdash was still standing. As we said, many were killed. The Gemara says some escaped to Alexandria in Mitzrayim. There was some times where there was a revival of Torah scholarship, but you know, it wasn't Pashut. In one way, which you could see, relates to Inyana Dioma, the state of Torah scholarship at this time. The Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Chaf Amud Aleph, says that the Torah was forgotten in Eretz Yisrael until Hillel came from Bavel and reestablished it. And how did that happen? So everybody found out about Hillel because one year Erev Pesach fell out on Shabbos, and the people came to try to figure out, you know, is Karim Pesach Docha Shabbos? So Bnei Beseira didn't know the answer, and Hillel did. And in a manifestation of their tremendous humility, they went ahead and they abdicated and they appointed Hillel the Nasi. And again, Hillel did revive Torah, though throughout the Herodian era, there was religious turmoil, we'll call it. So but again, just, you know, that shows really how weak the Torah knowledge was at that time. The halacha of Erev Pesach Alios B'Shabbos is not that, it's not like such a you know, esoteric question. It comes up pretty frequently. And yet nobody knew until Hillel told them. So it's very likely that that's also one of the reasons for the failure to get together and resolve these debates. That's sort of the internal strife. There was also, I mean, that was, you know, one aspect of internal strife and persecution. There was other conflicts between the Jews that favored Hellenism and the Jews that opposed it during the earlier period of the Zugos. During the later Zugos, we have the debates between the Tzdukim and the Prushim. So this was definitely a tumultuous period. And that might be another factor in the lack of resolution. Another factor might be that the high court, the Sanhedrin Gadol, did not always function in a full capacity. The Rambam writes, though we saw that they left the Beis HaMikdash around the year 30, but there were other things. According to Josephus, in the year 57 BCE, Gabinium, who was the Roman proconsul for Syria and Judea, divided the country up into five provinces, with each one with its own basedin, in order to weaken the authority of the Sanhedrin. Antipater also basically advised Gabinius to strip the power of Sanhedrin and give it to Hyrcanus II, that he had appointed the Kohen Gadol. The Mishnah Sota on Perek Tes records that Sanhedrin was abolished, so there was no more songs from the banquet halls. And that seemed to have taken place during this tkufa. So there were many, many factors contributing to a weakness in Torah scholarship, an inability to publicly gather to study, teach, and resolve Torah questions, weakening of the Sanhedrin, persecution. These are all factors, presumably. Another factor, this is a little more speculative, but I saw some suggest, is that the reason why there wasn't a resolution is because the Muflash of the Beis Din held up the matter and prevented there being a vote. There's a sefer called Yesod HaMishnah of Arichasa. It's written by Reb Ruben Margolios. And he argues for this idea. Maybe others suggest along similar lines that at this period in time, there were an even number of people on the Sanhedrin. If you look at Tosis in Sanhedrin, Tes Zion on the base. So it sounds like Tosos thinks that there were 72 members of the Sanhedrin, 71 regular, plus the Muflash of the Beis Din. And that might be, by the way, if you look at the Mishnah Zvachim and Yadayim, it refers to this Kabbalah, Mekubalanim epi Shivim Mishnaim Zakein. So what is 72? So according to the Gra, these were the members of the Sanhedrin. So that's one explanation why perhaps at this tkufa. Now, why there were 72 members, I don't want to get into the sugya now, but there are all sorts of explanations and theories given. There's a theory given by Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi and Doros HaRishonim about this question. But there are, like we said, a lot of reasons why they couldn't resolve these debates. So now, last time, we pointed out an interesting possibility to consider, which is, I want to say it a little differently, but an interesting idea. You know, certainly the idea that the debates were not resolved is tragic. Even if it's just the one debate, the debate about Smicha, which went on for generation after generation without resolution, it's a tragedy, and it was. But we could also look at it from a slightly different perspective, maybe by at least temporarily leaving the question unsettled. The Beis Din showed the value of legitimate debate among a people that are still fundamentally unified. In other words, the existence of a machlokas does not undermine the system. The Mishnah Avos says, that a machlokas that is l'shem shamayim will endure. And the example is the machlokas between Shammai and Hillel. What they were showing, whether intentionally or not, and certainly I don't think they would have intentionally wanted to keep a machlokas going forever, but what they were showing is that a debate can exist within a context of unity. It didn't have to be like a machlokas between the tzedukim and the pushim, which formed a schism. Here, we had the machloksin, even a little later, between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. So there were lots of machloksin, but there was still fundamental unity. The Gemara Yevam almost talked about how there was emes and shalom, how they figured out a way to allow for marriage and yichus problems not to proliferate despite the debate, and that the existence of machlokas, again, while ideally we want to resolve all machlokas, but nevertheless, the existence of machlokas does not undermine the system. On the contrary, they're gdarim, and it can ultimately strengthen the system. It allows us to see the differing perspectives in Torah Hashem. And that being the case, so Hashgacha had it that there was a positive element. So what I want to do now, that was sort of a little leftover from last week, is what I said we would do, which is to consider, again, this is sort of my structure, so you don't have to look at it this way, but six stages in the history of Machlokas. And I think sort of looking at it this way, you have it in your Makoros, will help us understand much better the nature of the development of the Tarsha Baal Peh. And then I think with that, we'll be able to go back to our question we discussed earlier, which is what exactly was given to Moshe at Har Sinai and what was developed later. So the first stage of Machlokas, first I'll just say the stages and then we'll elaborate on each one. So the first stage, which lasted from Matan Torah until the period of the Zugos, all debates were resolved by a Sanhedrin. In other words, there was never any ongoing unresolved debate. If there's a question about the halacha, like we saw, everybody would come to Yerushalayim, to the Beis Din, and they would take a vote. There wasn't a Kabbalah, and that would be it. That's number one. Stage two is during the period of the Zugos, there was one machlokas that was unresolved, and later during the last of the Zugos, Shammai and Hillel, there was an additional three machloksin that were unresolved. Period number three is following the deaths of Shammai and Hillel. So then the Gemara says, unresolved debates proliferated to the point that it was as though there were two Toros. Tekufa number four is following the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Sanhedrin moves to Yavne under the leadership of Rabbi Gamliel. And Rabbi Gamliel moved to restore a unity in Halacha. We'll talk more about that. He resolved the debates finally between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. They took a vote and they came to the conclusion that the halacha was like Beis Hillel. Tekufa number five is even after they paskin like Beis Hillel, but there were still numerous debates among the Tanaim and then in the subsequent generations, which were not definitively resolved. And I think we could look at that as during the rest of the period of the Tanaim and throughout the period of the Amoraim. Many halachic conclusions were reached. We find sometimes in Mishnayos, frequently in Gemara, that the Gemara does come to a conclusion. But many were not, and certainly were not reached with a halachic binding binding vote. And then finally, we have our period, our current tekufa, which began with Chasimas HaShas. We'll discuss what that means, and goes until today, whereby there is no such thing as a binding text. Like the Rambam says, the last binding text, and really the only binding text that we have is Talmud Bavli. And then we have to figure out, okay, so what do we do nowadays when we have debate? So those are the six tekufos. And now we will try to elaborate on each of them and figure out what we would do in each example. So like we said, first stage, we could call from the death of Moshe until Zugos. In other words, as long as Moshe was alive, I guess I'm not calling that as a call stage zero. As long as Moshe was alive, so if there was a Shaila in Halacha, so we could ask a Kaddish Baruch Hu, right? When Klal Yisrael comes and asks about the Karban Pesach, so Moshe simply tells them, Imdu v'eshme'am ma'itzaveh Hashem lachem. So once Moshe dies, so then there's Torah's Lo b'shamayim hi, and we no longer can resolve a Shaila through Nevuah. That's it. So how are we left to resolve a Shaila? We have to use our Seichel, the Kabbalos that we have, with the Seichel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, to go ahead and figure out what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, what the Torah wants. We can't look to Nevuah anymore. So with the death of Moshe, the written Torah was carefully transmitted from generation to the next, and the oral Torah was carefully transmitted from teacher to student. If you look at the Hakdama to Mishnah Torah, the Rambam lists who the chief participants in that transmission were. And if you take a look, it's on your sheets. So the Rambam goes ahead and tells you, we'll first talk about from Moshe Rabbeinu to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lived during basically the tkufa of the destruction of Bayis Sheni. So, right, Afal Pi, reading from the Rambams again, Hakdama to Mishnah Torah, Afal Pi Shelo Nichtefa Torah Shebal Peh, Limda Moshe Rabbeinu Kula Beveis Dina L'Shimon Zakenim, Ve'Lazio Pinchas Yoshua Shloshtan Kiblu Mimenu. U'Yoshua, Shehu Talmido, Shel Moshe Rabbeinu, Maser Torah Shebal Peh, V'Tziveu Alav, V'Chein Yoshua Kol Yimei Chayev Limeid Bal Peh. So Moshe transmitted to Yoshua, the Zakenim Rabbim, Kiblu mi Yoshua, the Kiblu min Zakenim mi Pinchas. Shmuel Kibo mi Eli ubeistino. So we have Moshe to Yoshua, Zakenim. Then we have Pinchas. And Shmuel. And David, Kibal Mishmuel Uvestino, and Achia Shiloni, who is Miyotzi Mitzrayim, Shama Mimosha, but he was young at that time, he was Kibal Midavid Uvestino, and Eliyahu Kibal from Achia, and Elisha from Eliyahu, and Yoshua Kohen, God HaKohen Kibal Mi Elisha, etc., etc. So the Rambam continues and tells you, Vishalshala Samasora, Ezra, Anshei Knesset Agdola, which included Chagai, Zachariah, Malachi, Daniel, Mishael, Azariah, Hananiah, etc., right? And this takes us, like we said, to the period of Zugos. Okay. Yes, Binyamin.
Hi, Rabbi. The Rambam, the Mishnah Avos, we know, talks about the Masorah of Kabbalah for Torah Shebal Peh. How does the Rambam know exactly who is the official guardian of Torah Shebal Peh, in the sense that Driz explains this kind of thing?
It's a good question. I don't know that there's a makor for every step in the Shalshalas, in the Rambam's Shalshalas HaMasorah. There are many, statements in Chazal and the like that we can use, that we could find to explain how the Rambam came up with his list. And there are actually a lot of interesting things about the list. We don't have time to go on it, but a lot of interesting things that the Rambam, could have done that he didn't do. Why, for example, does he omit Shlomo? It's interesting, and many, many interesting things about the Rambam. I don't know that that the Rambam had an explicit makor for this. Maybe somebody knows of one, let me know. And it's also true that, this is not, the people on this list were not the only people that did this, but rather they took upon themselves the achrayas to ensure the proper transmission of the Mesorah. Our Rabbi Diamond told me, I don't know if he'd sit it in the end, but he told me that in the Musar Shmuz that he gave this week, so he was going to talk about an interesting diuk that even though Pinchas learned from Moshe, Pinchas learned from, it was Makabel from Yeshua also. And why would we do it that way? After all, like, why do you need the step of Yeshua? And the answer is that the Rambam held that even though Pinchas did receive it from Moshe, because Yeshua took achrayas for being Moser, the Mesorah to the next generation, so in the Shalsheles, it goes from Yeshua to Pinchas, even though Pinchas learned from Moshe. So that is not to say that you see from here, you know, so why didn't it say, we could just skip the step. We could have said Moshe, Pinchas, and taken it from there. So if the goal was like efficiency, then fine. But that's not the goal. The point was that Yeshua, Moshe made sure that his Talmud Yeshua was ready to transmit the Mesorah. There were many great Chachanim at the time. We talked about last week how when the Torah is forgotten, Bimei Avlo Shel Moshe, Asniel ben Kenaz restored it by Pilpulo. Doesn't say Yeshua did. Asniel did. So he was not the only one. But these were the, if we had to pick one person that took achrayas to make sure, to ensure that the Mesorah was transmitted to the next generation. So I think that's what this list represents. Ephraim.
Yeah, it doesn't answer the question exactly, but I got this tape a couple days ago, Mar Makom was everything in the Rambam. Oh. And he goes through all the whole by himself and has everything, Makoros everything.
What sefer is that?
Mar Makom was for the Mishnah Torah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's been Hefker's there.
Oh, wow. Okay, can't beat the price. And and it goes ahead and, right. So again, I think like individual points, we could find Makoros for the Rambam. The question is, this idea, the way the Rambam sets it up as a shalsheles, that whereby in each step of the transmission, we could point to one person who took achrayas for the transmission of that Mesorah to the next generation, and then specifically who they were in each generation, I don't know. It's interesting, Agav, the Rambam, of course, you know, concludes his list with the Chasimas HaShas, as we'll see, we're not there yet, but the Meiri in his Perish on Pirkei Avos brings down the Shalshalas all the way till his time. So through the Tekuf of Rishonim, and you know, again, there are many, many lines that we could do, but, you know, one could very easily, and I've seen people do this, show how, you know, you can trace the Mesorah, you know, to you and to me. Not that, you know, we are the Chachmei Mesorah, or we are the people who took Achrayas. And one could argue that really the Rambam ends his list with Chasimas HaShas because the notion of there being a Achray on the transmission of the Mesorah ended with Chasimas HaShas, according to the Rambam. But the idea that you could trace the Mesorah from me to Matan Torah is something that we could do. And it's a very interesting and powerful idea. Okay, so we have, so far, how far have we gotten? We've gotten basically all the way to the period of Zugos, like we said. So that is what we're calling the first period. And again, like we said, during this first period, we find, prior to the Zugos, we find no unresolved debates, both because of the manner in which the care in which the Mesorah was transmitted, the fact that each Talmud was Meshamesh, Kohogan, their Rebbe, and of course, when there were Shilas, so you could just go and take a vote. So that's gauge one, number one. Stage number two, period of the Zugos. So let's just go back a little before the Zugos, right? So the Jewish people return from the exile in Bavel. There's the Anshei Knesset HaGedola. It included people, like we said, Ezra, Nehemiah, Mordechai, Chagai, Zechariah, Malachi. The last of these, the members of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, was Shimon HaTzadik. The death of Shimon HaTzadik marks the beginning of the period of the Zugos. So the Rambam says about this, Antignos Ishocho Ubeistino Kiblo Meshimon HaTzadik Ubeistino. V'Yosef, again, we're continuing where we left off before. V'Yosef Ben Yoezer Ish Treda V'Yosef Ben Yochanan Ish Yushalayim Ubeistinam Kiblo Me Antignos Ubeistino V'Yoshua Ben Prachya. Right? So these are the Zugos, the same Zugos that we saw in the Mishnah and Chagiga. And as we said before, here we have that unresolved debate regarding Smicha. Okay. So that was the period of Zugos. And we talked about before why that particular machlokas was not resolved when it was. Okay, so that's stage number two, the Zugos. There were one unresolved debate, and then the final generation of the Zugos, four unresolved debates. And we talked about why didn't they resolve those debates. But still, that was prior to the proliferation of debate, right? Easily counting all debates on one hand. Then we have the proliferation of debate. That's going to be stage three. And that is following the death of Shammai and Hillel. The Talmidim of Hillel and his Talmidim had a yeshiva. It was known as Beis Hillel. And there was another yeshiva at that time, led by Shammai, known as Beis Shammai. And we had a very tricky situation at that time. Hillel was the Nasi, and he had more followers. So the question is, so why didn't they just say, okay, so he's the majority, and the ruling should follow him. Why did we even have two yeshivas? Why didn't the two yeshivas merge under Hillel's authority? So not clear. I saw in a sefer called Divrei Yemei Bayasheni. It's written by Rabbi Yekutiel Friedner, and he suggests two reasons why the yeshivas didn't merge. Number one is the respect for Shammai. Shammai's scholarship was certainly unparalleled. Shammai valiantly stood up to Herod when he was tried for mass murder. And that was one reason. They didn't want to be pogea in Shammai by sort of all joining. Here's another theory, that a single yeshiva would arouse the suspicion of Herod, who was certainly a neurotic person. So therefore, there was no central authority or resolution. And therefore, again, in the following the death of Shammai and Hillel, it said that debate proliferated to the extent that it was, is Nasa Shtei Toros. So what'd they do, right? This was something that never happened before, is Nasa Shtei Toros. You had two groups of people who fundamentally accepted Torah and Halacha, right? It's not like, you know, the Hellenists and one group of people were off the derech. Here we had two great yeshivas, but the differences between them were on many, many halachos. So what'd they do? What'd they do? So the Gemara says, well, what do you do in such a situation? So you could choose. Somebody could decide to be from the Beis Shammai, and somebody could decide to be Beis Hillel. And it's totally up to you. You just have to be consistent, right? So this is said in a couple of places, like Ervin on Vav and Beis Zayin and Aleph. Fadetani liolam halacha k'Beis Hillel, varotza lasos k'divrei Beis Shammai osa, k'divrei Beis Hillel osa, mikulei Beis Shammai, mikulei Beis Hillel rasha. So if a person says, I want to follow the coolest of both, that's a rasha. Somebody who says, I want to follow the chumras of Beis Shammai and chumra Beis Hillel, that's ksil b'choshecholich. He's a fool walking in the darkness. Ella, ikah Beis Shammai kikuleim ukuchumreim, ikah Beis Hillel kikuleim ukuchumreim. So a person goes ahead and says, you know what? Like, you know, what speaks to me more, right? I could choose to go to Beis Shammai. I could choose to go to Beis Hillel. So the Gemara says, what's going on? First it says, halacha likes Beis Hillel, and then it says, you could choose to go like Beis Shiloh, Beis Shammai. So the Gemara says very simple, ha kodem basko, halacher basko. So before the halacha was decided in favor of Beis Hillel, which wouldn't take place for several generations, not until Rabban Gamliel's time, post Beis HaMikdash. So until that time, everyone could choose, and you could go ahead. And the Gemara says something very important, which is that's true before the decision that the halacha is like Beis Hillel. You could join either camp. You just have to be consistent. And the same thing is true even afterwards for other situations. So kol hecha de mishkachas trei tanai the trei amorai de pligi adade kein machlokas beisham Beis Hillel, the Gemara says, lo le'aved ki kulei demar uvechi kulei demar lo kechomrei demar v'chichomrei demar ela ki kulei demar kechomrei aved o kikulei demar kechomrei aved. And again, we're going to see that's really the setup that's going to be very relevant. Ad hayom hazeh. Ad hayom hazeh, you could pick, but then you need to be consistent. So that's what happened. That's what happened. And the Gemara tells us, and that's so important, that during, though there were so many machloksin between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, but there was friendship, ta'emes v'ashalom avu. There was a love of emes, so nobody compromised on what they thought was right, but there was also shalom, and this is a machlokes l'shem shamayim, and they had respect for each other. Oh, you know, there were some exciting times, but fundamentally, that's what characterized it. Okay, so that's periods three. Again, following the Zugos, we have the proliferation of debate. Torah turns into Shtei Toros, right? So you have this crazy situation where, you know, half of the Jews were following Beis Shammai, half are following Beis Hillel, Mamish Kishtei Toros. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, following the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, as we know, moves the center of Torah and the high court to Yavne. That was one of the three requests that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai made from the Romans. It was granted. And now we're in Yavne. The Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. And Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai allows Rabbi Gamliel to become the Nasi. Rabbi Gamliel was a descendant of David HaMelech. And so now we are in Yavne. The temple is destroyed. And Rabbi Gamliel says, you know, this has got to come to an end, right? We have these Machlokas and Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, it's Kishtei Toros. We need there to be one Torah, not two. And so for 3 years, they debated this question. Should we follow Beis Hillel? Should we follow Beis Shammai? What happened? So the Gemara in Erevin, Yud Gimel Amid Beis, tells us, Amar Rabbi Abba Amar Shmuel, Shalosh Shanim Nechloku Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, Halal Omrim Halacha Kamoseinu, Halal Omrim Halacha Kamoseinu, Yatza Baskol Ve'amra, Eil Ve'elu Devek Lim Chayim, So both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are right. Both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel are Divei Elokim Chayim. Later on, I hope we could talk about what that means, Divei Elokim Chayim. I mean, what does that mean? Which one is right? Is one? What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? How could they both be equally Divei Elokim Chayim? We'll get back to that question. But they're both MS. They're both Divei Elokim Chayim. They're both the Dvar Hashem. But Halach L'maisa, you need to know what to do. And therefore, the Halach is like Beis Hillel. So how did they figure out Halacha K'Beis Hillel? So here we have an interesting thing. And we seem to have confusion in Chazal in terms of what was the source for the conclusion that Halacha K'Beis Hillel. So we just saw the Gemara in Erevin that said Yatzta Baskol. Sounds like the decision was based off of Baskol. If you look at the Gemara Pesachim, Kuf Yadal and Medal, it says like this. The Halacha K'Beis Hillel. Pshita, the Hanavik Baskol. Ibai Seyma Kodin Baskol. V'ibayzema lachar baskol, Rabbi Yoshua hi da'amar ein mashkichin bebaskol. Seems like there's machlokas tanaim, whether mashkichin bebaskol or ein mashkichin bebaskol. So, according to the first interpretation of the Gemara, so the baskol was what determined the halachos like Beis Hillel. According to Rabbi Yoshua, ein mashkichin bebaskol, and therefore the halacha is like Beis Hillel, not because of a baskol. So that's what the Gemara sounds like. However, this is many of the Rishonim point out that is not the case because we can't follow a Paschal. First of all, Lo B'Shamayim Hi. And a proof for this is the Sugya of Tanur Shel Achnai. So there we have the famous story in the fourth parak of Amitziah, in which the Chachamim disagreed with Rebbe Lazar. Lazar was able to bring all these nisim that supported his position, and they didn't pay attention to them. There was a Baskel that says Halacha Rebbe Lazar, and that too was rejected. Why? Because Lo B'Shamayim Hi. And that's what Rabbi Yeshua says over there in Mashgichim Nebaskol. So that Gemara would suggest that it's clear that we don't accept a Baskol, and a Baskol cannot play a role in determining the halacha. And what matters is a rove. And moreover, if you're going to say there was a rove, so why do you need a Baskol, right? In other words, if we assume that the reason why the halacha is like Beis Hillel is because they were the rove, so then what is the need for a Baskol? So Tosfos says a couple of answers. One answer is in Psachim, is that you need the Baskol because even though there is a rove like Beis Hillel, you might have still thought that's not decisive because Beis Shammai were sharper. And that's what the first answer of the Gemara is saying. The Baskol is sometimes relevant with respect to the determination of the law, but only when it doesn't contradict another halachic principle. So when, in this case, Beis Shammai were Charif Tvei, Beis Hillel were Rov, so the Baskol was Koveya, that taka the halacha is like Beis Hillel. And the Gemara's second answer is no, in Mashgichim Baskol, meaning halacha, there's no role of Baskol whatsoever. Oh, so then Tosa says, so what's the point of the Baskol? So the answer is because of Kavod. In other words, why was there Baskol? Because of, in the case of Rebbe Lazar, it's not because, you know, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make there be a Baskol? So Baskols do not play a role in determining the halacha, but rather the Baskol was to show Kavod. But in the end of the day, according to the second answer of Taisus, there is no heavenly intervention whatsoever when it comes to the determination of the halacha. And this is the view of the Rambam as well. This is the way Tosfos understands at least the position of Rabbi Yeshua. This is the Rambam, says this in many places, among them in the Hakdama to the Perusha Mishnah and in the Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, Perek Tes, Halacha Dalet. He says that we never find anything but seichel determining the halacha. There's no heavenly intervention. It's an interesante sugya. There are a lot of makoros dealing with certain places that maybe don't sound this way. One place where you could see a nice discussion of this, there's a sefer called Sheilos HaTshuvos Min HaShamayim, which is written, it was written in the 12th century, and it's a discussion between Reb Yaakov and Amalach, and seems to imply it is B'Shamayim Hi. So if you look at the Hakdama to that work, written by Reb Reuven Margolios, in the Hakdama in the Moshe Rav Kook edition, he goes through the whole sugya, and he talks about this question, about when, if ever, do we consider and allow for heavenly intervention. But for now, we'll just say that for the most part, we don't. And certainly that's the view of the Rambam. And therefore, that is how the machlokas ultimately between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel was resolved by a majority vote in Yavne, and that was that. And following that, there was an Amida Laminyan, and following that, so then the perspective of Beis Shammai basically has no effect in halacha. It's totally rejected. Shamutehu. In fact, even though we believe that Shammai's view is Eil Ve'Eil Devar Elokim Chayim, like the Gemara says explicitly, but you can't rely on it in halacha. Even the pashtos b'shas adchak, at least if it were a kula or the like, the Gemara says that even though we have like a principle, this is the Gemara at the beginning of the Ketz Mevarchim, even if we have a principle that You're allowed to follow the lenient position in terms of agricultural laws outside of Eretz Yisrael that doesn't apply to a position of Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai's position was totally rejected. Why? Because there's an Amidah L'Minyan. And once there's an Amidah L'Minyan, once there is a vote, then the rejected opinion is rejected. Now, this, by the way, and this is really a shear in itself, but Bekitzer might be different than the principle of Yachid V'Rabim Halacha K'Rabim. We find, for example, that many Rishonim, not all Rishonim hold this way, but many Rishonim distinguish between a situation where there's an Amidah L'Minyan, meaning to say there's Masa Matan, the Sanhedrin gets together, they vote, everybody has a chance to express and argue for their position, and then they vote, and we follow the majority. In that case, the minority view following the vote has no standing, more or less. Then there's another principle of Yachid V'Rabim Halacha K'Rabim. Yachid V'Rabim Halacha K'Rabim is different. What that means is that there was never an Amidah L'Minyan, but the majority of position is one way or the other. And we treat that differently because there wasn't an Amidah L'Minyan. It could be that this din is only a din de Rabbanan. That's why, for example, we find that in certain areas of halacha, we follow Das Yachid, right? In Hilchos Avelos, in Hilchos Erevin, we say Halacha de Vermego, Be'avel, even Yachid Keneged Rabim. That's because there wasn't an Amidah L'Minyan. According to Tosfos and Erevin, that would be true even if it was a Daraisa Shaila. So, therefore, that's a different call, and that's why it could be B'Shas Adchak. You could follow a Das Yachid. Well, how could you follow Das Yachid? I don't understand. Achrem Lahatus, you're going against the Torah. The Torah says you follow the majority. And it's a machlokes, achronim, shachtaz, about whether you follow that in Ramah, whether you apply that principle of somchan al das yachid b'shas adchak, even for din d'oraisa, according to many, and we might even paskin this way, even in a d'oraisa shayla, it could be somchan al das yachid b'shas adchak. So how could that be? The Torah said follow the majority. Who are you to say, I know better than the Torah, I'm going to follow the minority opinion? The answer is very simple, because when here there was no Amidah L'Minyan, and therefore, the principle of Yachid V'Rabim Halacha K'Rabim is only a din d'Rabbanan when there's no Amidah L'Minyan. Without an Amidah L'Minyan, even though you know the majority of position, but the Torah doesn't say you have to follow the majority because they didn't get together and vote. And therefore, even though we do have a general principle of Halacha K'Rabim, but under certain circumstances, you could follow the Das Yachid. Again, it could be that's the way we paskin. Many achronim point out that, let's say, in an aguna shaila, we're somech on a minority opinion because it's a shas adchak gadol, right? And the truth is, this Ridei points out that actually relies on making two assumptions. Number one is that if you held that safek deraisa l'chumra is deoraisa, then how could you do it? And moreover, if you held Yachid V'Rabim, Halacha K'Rabim is deraisa, how could you do that? Anyway, now's not the time to get into that. It's a very interesting shaila. But Bekitzer, so what we have over here is that in Yavne, they resolved certain machloksin, like the halacha following Beis Hillel, in which case, subsequently, the position of Beis Shammai is no longer an acceptable position. Until that point, Ratza, if you wanted to be from the Talmidei Beis Shammai, you could be. If you wanted to be from the Talmidei Beis Hillel, you could be. Following the vote, then you can't. Beis Shammai's opinion was repudiated. But other machlokesin were not clearly resolved. Again, why? Not so clear. But many, many positions weren't. Why did they focus on Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, and not other machlokes? Machlokes HaTanaim is not so clear. Why did they stop? Maybe because Beis Shammai Beis Hillel was a bigger problem because it was Nasek Ishtei Toros. Maybe initially they were able to gather together and vote, but subsequent persecution didn't allow that, right? We know the Romans who were in charge at this time were not very pro-Torah. It seems that though initially the Chachamim were gathered together in Yavne, and even though the Sanhedrin did continue even after they left Yavne, as we mentioned last week, there were 10 Golios of the Sanhedrin, but not all the Chachmei Yisrael were always in one place, right? It says that the Gemara Sanhedrin, Chaf Lamed Beis, on the base says, follow Rabbi Lazar to Lod, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to Bor Chayil, and Rabbi Yeshua to Pekin, and Rabbi Liel to Yavne, and Rabbi Akiva to Bnei Brak, and Rabbi Hananya ben Tradion to Sichin, so Rabbi Yossi to Tzipori. In other words, it seems like the Chachmei Yisrael were not gathered together typically in the same place, though maybe for the Lel HaSeder one year they were, as we read in Haggadah. And like we said last time, for whatever reason it is, Hashgacha arranged that these debates could not be resolved. And again, despite the downsides of that, there's also this allowed for the development of the Torah Shebaal Peh. Okay, so that brings us to the next Kufa, which is again, you know, where we could call it the later Tanaim and Amoraim, where there continued to be debate, and some, right, the Bavli, the Yerushalmi, was finished first, the Bavli was a little later. We're not going to talk about the nature of the development of the Bavli and how it was written. It is a very interesting Shaila, but we don't have time for it today. I don't want to go late because it's so close to Pesach. But the Gemara tells us that it's a Gemara in Bava Metzia, Pei Vav Amud Aleph, and it says, Rav Ashi v'Ravina Sof Hora'ah. So Rav Ashi and Ravina were the end of the period of Hora'ah. Now, it's not clear what that means, but what's clear is that something happened at this point. Something happened at the time of Ravina and Rav Ashi, Sof Hora'ah. So what does that mean, Taka? If you look over there at Rashi, it sounds like Ravina and Rav Ashi collected all of the Amoraim's discussions until that point and clarified them and organized them into something that resembles our Gemara, right? Rashi writes, Sof Hora'ah, Sof Kol Amoraim, Ad Yemehem, Lo Haisa Gemara, Al Seder, Ella Kishahaisa She'ela Nishalas Betama Mishnah, Bevesa Medrash, O She'ela Maisa Ha'ora, Bedin Mamon, O Isser Veheter, Kolecha Vechad Oimer Taimo, Ravashi Bravina Sidru Shmuos Amoraim Shalifnehem. So we had all this Torah of Amoraim, and Ravina and Ravashi were Mesaderet, the Kavu Al Seder HaMesechtos, and they put it in its proper place, Kolecha Vechad Eitzel Mishnah Ruya. So they go ahead, right? And they said, oh, this machlokas between Rav and Abai goes over here, and this machlokas goes over here. And they structured it. Vishnuyala, the Hikshu Kushio, Shiesh Lahashiv, Uperukim, and they addressed Siras, Shiruyan Latarits, Haim Vamuram Shem Sheimahem, the Kavua call Bigamara, Kigum, Aisve, Mesve, Vraminhu, Ibailahu. Right, so all those questions, the Stama de Gemaras that asked the Yishailas and the Terutzim, this was all part of the editing or redaction or whatever you want to call it of Ravina and Rav Ashi at the very end. Right, so they were taking, and that's why when you look at the Gemara, you see like so many layers that take place during so many generations. Now, if you're not paying attention to the history, you don't necessarily notice. You don't notice that we have discussions, conversations that really go on, you know, over hundreds of years. That was all organized by Ravina Rav Ashi. And that's what the Rashi understands when it says that they were Sof Hora'ah. It's interesting, if you look at the Rambam in his Hakdama to Mishnah, he attributes this to Rav Ashi alone. V'nisyached Rav Ashi l'chabram. If you look at Rav Shri Ragon in his letter, so he writes a Rashi collected and clarified and unified the Gemara, but he didn't seal the work. So according to Rashi Ragon, there were revisions after Rav Ashi, and he says that it was sealed by Ravina, the son of Rav Huna, who was an eighth generation Amora. In other words, I think what he's saying is Rav Ashi was the editor and Ravina was the Chosein. Rashi understands, I think, that Ravina that we're referring to was the contemporary of Ravashi, who was a sixth generation Amora. Whereas, again, I think according to Sri Ragon, they're two generations apart. And Ravashi lived, and then two generations later, a different Ravina came and was Chosem. Kalpanim, there again, we're not going to go into it. There's a debate exactly what happened. And what we mean by Chasimas HaShas, not so clear. If you look at Doros HaRishonim, again, by Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Halevi, who was really one of the first to write a from history, and he really worked very hard during this tkufa to try to figure out how the Gemara was written and organized and the like. So he understands us in a more literal way, that the Gemara was a complete text. And sometime in the sixth century, you know, it was sealed. And that was it. That was done. A modern scholarship says maybe that's not so clear. Might have been some changes or clarifications a little later. The Gaonim and Rishonim also talk about this question. You know, sometimes you'll see the Ramban writing, you know, this particular line came afterwards or the like. But more or less, during this tkufa, the Gemara was done. And you see that subsequent to this, certainly in the Gaonim and the Rishonim, nobody ever has a Havamina to argue with the Gemara. There's machloks in what did the Gemara say? Or there's machloks in what, sometimes there's machlokas about the text of the Gemara, the Girsa. Sometimes you have a machlokas what the conclusion of the Gemara is. You have a lot of machlokas in about how to read the Gemara. But everybody accepts that whatever is in the Gemara is binding, and nobody could argue with the Gemara. And so that's really what we mean by Chasimas HaShas. And the Rambam writes that the reason why that's binding, this is the Rambam in Hakdamat Mishneh Torah, is because it was accepted by Klal Yisrael. So just look at the Hakdamat of the Mishnah, and this Rambam writes, Nimtza Ravina Ravashi v'chavrehem sof gedoli chachmei Yisrael hamatikin tar shabal pet. That was it. V'shegazru gzeros v'eskinu takanos v'nhigu min hagos u'pashtu gzeros v'takanos min havasam b'chol Yisrael b'chol m'chol mosh v'osem. So this Talmud Bavli was accepted by all of Klal Yisrael. And achardino shal Ravashi. So then, what happened? Nispazur Yisrael b'chol haratzois, and people spread out, and there was never a place where they got together and could debate and the like. And therefore, at that point, from that point onwards, all authority is local. So you have to follow the Beis Din in your city, but one city can't compel another city. B'chol Beis Din she'amar achar Talmud b'chol medina medina v'gazar o hiskin o hinhig l'bnei medinaso o l'bnei medinos lo pashtu ma'ase b'chol Yisrael, never spread. If it spread, it spread. If it didn't spread, it didn't spread. Let's give a mashal for Pesach that's coming up in a couple of days, right? Kineos is a minna. And it spread. It started off in like a small tkufa, and then it spread in small area in a couple of cities or areas in Ashkenazic lands. And then it, you know, eventually over the centuries spread throughout all of Ashkenaz. But it didn't spread to the Sephardic countries. So therefore, those in Ashkenazi countries have to keep it. Those in Sephardic countries don't. And therefore, the Rambam writes, "Lafikach ein kof in anche medina zu linhog b'medina b'minhag medina acheres," and that's what happened. So, and therefore, what do we do nowadays? So nowadays, we have no central authority. We have no way to resolve debates, and therefore, we sort of go back to what we had before, which is that harotza lasos, a person has to find a rav, a person has to find a rebbe, and follow their psakim, bein lakula, bein lachumra. And if you do kula demar, kula demar, you're a rasha. If you do kachumra demar, kachumra demar, you're ksil b'choshecholech. There is a concept, again, we don't have time to do it now, of how you resolve these types of shilas. I guess we're out of time. So what we'll do is, I think we'll have one more shiur on this topic. I guess that'll be the first shiur after Pesach, which will be, you know, after we get back to yeshiva, and we'll go back also to in-person classes on Thursday for those who want, Be'ezus Hashem, and then we'll talk about, so what does that mean, l'maisa nowadays, both halachically and ishkathically. We'll talk also about Eilu De'Eilu De'Eilu Kim Chayim, and we'll try to wrap it up and sum it up and bring it all together. I want to wish you all a good Shabbos, Chag Kashrut Sameach, Yashar Koach, and Be'ezus Hashem, we'll see you after Ben Hazmanim.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Tiantev, good Tiantev.